This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world. Well, today we have an old friend back with us with one heck of a show. We're going to have fun, a lot of fun, and important fun. Preston Dennett began investigating UFOs and the paranormal in 1986 when he discovered that his family, friends, and co-workers were having dramatic, unexplained encounters. Since then, he has interviewed hundreds of witnesses and investigated a wide variety of paranormal phenomena, and done, by the way, as you will find, a fabulous job of it, because today we're going to be talking about onboard UFO encounters, including one that touches on something that I am pretty sure is true, but have never talked about because I don't have enough corroboration, but now maybe I do. And another that involves my book, Communion, and which made me laugh out loud for a reason we will get to later. But we're going to go down many paths today, some of them scary, some of them beautiful, some of them wonderful, all of them mysterious. Preston Dennett, welcome to Dreamland.
Hey, thanks, Whitley. Thanks for having me back on the show. Appreciate it.
Well, it's always fun, Preston. PrestonDennett.Weebly.com. That's WEEBLY.com. PrestonDennett.Weebly.com. And today we're going to be talking about onboard UFO encounters. Now, before we start, Preston, I have to ask you, what drew you to this? I've always suspected that you might be a close encounter witness yourself.
I certainly wonder about that too. I don't quite have any memories or experiences like the people I write about, not to that extent. But yeah, it's definitely in my family. I mean, both my sister-in-laws have had face-to-face encounters. My brother, two nephews. I've had a number of very close-up sightings. Probably the best was I was driving along. This is 1993 or so. Just starting to do some really major research. And this ball of light comes dropping down right in front of my car. And I'm guessing it's about 2 feet in front of my windshield, about the size of a golf ball. Moves back and forth twice, kind of dips down and goes straight up through the trees. You know, Whitley, I didn't tell anybody. I didn't think about it. It kind of left my mind. I don't remember driving home. So there's that. I've been looking back at that thing. You know, for all I know, I could have had missing time.
Yeah, so easily. The last time I know of that I had missing time was sitting meditating in my living room where I meditate twice a night. I had started my 11 o'clock meditation, and I usually do it for about half an hour at 11 o'clock, maybe a little more. And the next thing I knew, it was 2 a.m. And I don't recall. I certainly didn't fall asleep in any normal way. I thought I'd been meditating for about 10 minutes, but I felt like I would also, something was off. I looked at the clock and thought, what in the world? What happened to that time?
Yeah.
So it happens, and it's very subtle. Sometimes you don't notice it. I think maybe it happens a lot and to a lot of people, and they don't notice it.
Exactly. Yeah, I totally agree.
So let's get into this book, Onboard UFO Encounters. It contains 15 stories, and I read a number of them. I was just getting ready to interview Preston a few minutes ago, and he said, have you read chapter 14? And I had not. And so I looked at chapter 14, and as you will find later, he was right to suggest to me that I read chapter 14. So we stopped everything. I went back and I read it. And now we will be talking about that and many other things. Now, Preston, you had, these are quite a few people. How did you find them? Did you interview them all personally, or how did you do this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've spoken to each of them extensively. A number of them, you know, they've had experiences their entire lives.
Yeah.
One gentleman is 73 years old now. I've spent hours and hours and hours talking to him. So, yeah, I've spoken to each of them. They reach me in different ways. A number of them through my website. I do get a steady stream of emails from people who hear about my research or read my books. Sometimes through radio shows, conventions, sometimes just through friends. So pretty much all of those methods is where I found all these people. 10 men and 5 women are represented in this book, which I thought was kind of interesting because a lot of the onboard experiences seem to focus on women.
Yeah, that's true. I'm a man, and I've had onboard experiences, but it's very, you know, and I think it's because women are less, in a way, less threatened by it, and it's easier for them to address these memories. That's a guess on my part.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. It's very interesting, though.
Yeah, well, I know that when I first began to remember what happened to me, I was extremely embarrassed because I had, you know, I had been sexually penetrated, and, you know, the man doesn't like to talk about that. In fact, because I did talk about it, I have had 30 years of being laughed at. So guys are right not to talk about it. And that is, I'm sure it's a commonplace experience. So that could be one of the reasons.
At least two of the witnesses in this book had that experience, and one's like, "Please, I don't even mention it."
Yeah,
and the other guy was pretty assertive. He's like, "Yeah, you know, this is akin to rape. This was not a good experience for me."
Yeah, it was. That was exactly what. Well, you know, in my case, the scarring was so bad that I suffered from it I was still going to the doctor to get treated for it 25 years later.
Wow.
Yeah, and then hearing people laugh about it on the television and the radio was amazingly horrible. It changed my whole attitude toward my fellow man. I had to make a real effort to even stand the presence of some people, because I began to see them laughing, sort of, we used to call it laughing up their sleeves. When they were with me, they were laughing in themselves. People I had to work with and stuff. Really rough. And I can understand why men wouldn't talk about it. But let's talk about, since we're on this subject, let's talk about the case of the two cases. Let's first talk about the one, the guy who says, oh God, let's not talk about this. Let's talk about that case.
Yeah, that's Ramon. That's a pseudonym. He has gone public with his experiences, but they're very extensive, and he has a large family. It was around 1954. He's like 6 years old, 53. And he was out with his friends, a half dozen kids. This is in San Fernando, California, right at the base of Hanson Dam. And they saw this UFO, typical flying saucer, metallic with portholes. There were figures looking down at them, waving. And this UFO goes and lands right at the base of Hanson Dam. This is early morning. The kids jump on their bikes and bike towards it. And as they get there, they realize this is a much stranger thing than they thought.
Yeah.
All the kids run away except for Ramon.
And how old was Ramon at that point?
He's 6 years old.
Six. So he's a little baby, really. Baby.
Right.
Yeah, a little boy.
Very young.
Now.
Actually approaches this thing, climbs on top of it, all the way around it, finds an opening, and falls inside. All he really remembers is there's lots of colored lights, and it was a very scary experience. Magenta lights, gold lights. And he jumps back out, or he finds himself outside of it, and it's gone. And it's a couple of hours later. And over the next week or two, this experience repeated itself. He was pulled out of his bedroom, floating up through the wall, back to this UFO, which was landed again at the base of the dam. Happened like 4 times. He remembered, you know, more of each experience. He remembered being placed in kind of a dental chair. That detail comes up a lot.
A lot, yeah.
A viewport in front of him showing a star field with stars moving around, things like this. He was physically examined, he said, by gray-type ETs, which were very short. He didn't get a good look at him because it was pretty scary. But, yeah, it was a very painful experience for him. He was sore for weeks afterward, and this kind of began all of his encounters. He's a gentleman, just, you know, please don't talk about what happened there.
Yeah. Well, so we won't talk about it because everyone can figure it out. The question in my mind is, why does it happen at all? I know why it happened to me, because it was a device that that is still used, actually. It was used in those days for people with sexual dysfunction, and it's still used in animal husbandry. And I've often wondered if they use the type that they use for bulls instead of people with me. Anyway, it stimulates a nerve and causes an erection, and then they can extract semen from you. That's what it was done to me, and I think that's done to maybe to most or all men who have close encounters like this. I think it's done routinely. But to a six-year-old child, I just can't imagine why they would do that.
Yeah, I mean, one lady I interviewed years ago, she actually asked them, what are you doing? You know, there's nothing up there. What are you doing? And they said, we're measuring the levels of pollution in your body.
Well, you know, that's interesting that you say that. Because when one of the dark blue figures that was in my experience took it out, he looked at it and seemed very displeased. And I, you know, if they were measuring the level of pollution in my body, the night after Christmas, they might have found things, that, you know, a lot of liquor and cream from hot toddy, hot toddies and goose and all kinds of stuff. So maybe they were displeased. That could be a part of it, but why would they do that? You know, what do they care about that?
I mean, it happened to Jim Sparks, you know, a well-known abductee, and they told him, you've got to stop eating meat. I don't know, they seem to be very interested in people's bodies, and I'm convinced that they do maintain people's health to a certain degree.
I know they do. They maintain my health very carefully. And, you know, I've understood from them that when it's time for me to go, then that will stop. But until then, it's like having, you know, they do a lot of health maintenance, not enough because I've got a lot of arthritis, osteoarthritis, and I wish they would maintain that. But it's mainly nutritional. Free Dreamlanders, we're going to take a little break right now. We'll be back with Preston Dennett in just a moment, and we're going to be going very deep into the close encounter experience and talking about it very frankly. So we'll be right back. As always, Dreamland's theme music is The O of Pleasure from Ray Lynch's beautiful album, Deep Breakfast, available at raylynch.com.
Whitley Strieber became the host of Dreamland in 1998, and he's still the host today. One of the first podcasts, Dreamland has been built into the premier program of its kind, exploring the edge of science and reality. The show's archive on unknowncountry.com dates back to 2004. Dreamland is a treasure unique in the world.
At this point in this commercial, I used to say that you can't subscribe because we are still in our old website, but that has changed at last. unknowncountry.com's new website is available. Go to unknowncountry.com and take a look. It is beautiful. It offers a huge archive, weekly chats, a free message board, all kinds of great stuff, Whitley Strieber audiobooks for subscribers, and much, much more. New stuff coming on the site all the time. So go to unknowncountry.com, take a look, and really open your mind. How do you do that? By subscribing and exploring and having a great time.
Earthfiles.com is Linda Moulton Howe's great website offering news of the edge of science and reality. Keep up with Linda's work every single day on Earthfiles.com. A new world is coming. Whitley has just finished his book about what it's like to live with and communicate with the visitors. He's been doing this for the past 30 years, and since 2015, the intensity of it has exploded. So be among the first to know what living with them is really like, and what it will be like for more and more of us in the future. A new world, unforgettable.
It's getting great reviews. Take a look on Amazon. It's available as a Kindle, as an ebook everywhere else, and as a paperback at Barnes & Noble and on Amazon, and as also as a hardcover on Barnes & Noble and Amazon, and as an audiobook read by me on audible.com. We're talking to Preston Dennett. His website, prestondennett.weebly.com. His new book, Onboard UFO Encounters, a deep dive. This is a serious book. It's a wonderful readable, like all of Preston books. It's good reading, very enjoyable. But at the same time, it delves very deeply into a subject that is much more serious. You guys know this, listeners to Dreamland, how serious this subject is, but then the world realizes. The world's mostly tuned this out. They don't want to hear about it. They don't care. It's not in their lives. They think, they imagine that, but it probably is in their lives. It's probably in a lot of lives. And let me ask you this, Preston, in all of your years of doing this type of research and having it at least close to you in your family and among your friends, I mean, the close encounter experience and seeing UFOs yourself, do you think this is just part of life or something that only happens kind of in a special way to people?
It's hard to say. I think it's much more pervasive than people realize. There's one gentleman in the book, I call him Gary from England. He's seen large groups of people on board UFOs. He's pretty sure a lot of, or most people, he thinks, if not all, are having a UFO experience and just don't remember it. Whether or not it's a part of everyone's life, at some point it will be. I think we're trending towards that. At some point, we're going to have open official contact. It's got to happen. I just can't see it happening any other way, or going backward, I mean. So, yeah, I think it's far, far more widespread than people realize.
Well, I think so, too. And I think that they're in a way that it's like a farm, and we're the farm animals. And we're going to have David Pilates on the show again, who talks about disappearances. He's moving right now. He's in the middle of the coronavirus epidemic and also moving. He can't do an interview right now. In any case, there is one story in here about that, and we're going to return to the guy who was forthright about talking about his experience in just a minute. Since we're getting off on this subject, let's do a little segue, and then we'll circle back to what we were talking about earlier about the penetrations and another witness who had a much more forthright reaction to it. And anyways, let's talk a little bit about Pat's gift, the story of Pat and what Pat saw. This is Pat Cates.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely one of the more unusual contact stories I've run across. Pat grew up, she was born in 1943, grew up in Florida, and immediately started having unusual experiences. I think she was about 6 years old. She was staying at her grandparents' house, and she was on the second story, looking out the window, and saw a little man with, you know, strange dark eyes, bald head, staring at her. Freaked her out. She thought something had followed them home from the circus, which they had visited that day.
Right. That's a logical thing for a kid to think.
Right? Her grandparents pointed out, "Listen, honey, we're on the second floor. It must have been your imagination." Of course, it wasn't. More strange things started to happen. At a very young age, she was diagnosed with leukemia, and that just, boom, disappeared, completely baffled the doctors, started having lots of precognition and psychic experiences, a number of sightings. Probably her most interesting experience, I mean, she would have what she called UFO dreams, where she'd wake up on board a UFO, there'd be grays there, sometimes she'd be examined, sometimes they were showing her around. She wasn't quite sure what was going on and called them UFO dreams. And then one day, this is actually on November 13th, 1985, she had another one of her UFO dreams. But this time she didn't wake up on board a UFO. She was standing next to one. And she's outside looking, it's morning, looking over a small village, or a large village actually, maybe in South America somewhere, Peru, Mexico, she couldn't quite tell. Definitely not the U.S. There's a man standing next to her, human looking, but he's wearing a blue jumpsuit. And of course this large UFO, very large UFO, with other grays and human figures walking around it, had a large ramp leading down. And she somehow knew that she was there to take people into this UFO. And that's what they did. This human-looking figure led her down into the village. And one by one, they started taking people into the lower level of this UFO. Spent a good amount of time doing this, a couple of hours, and filled it up with about 500, 1,000 people. There was a second UFO right next to it, also filling up with people. And she had a sense something terrible was going to happen. And sure enough, the UFOs lift up as this volcano explodes. Turned out this giant blast of pyroclastic flow of mud and ice and debris, houses, you know, dead bodies. It was horrific, completely freaked her out. This UFO came down, scooped people out of the mud flows, rescued as many people as they could. And long story short, next thing she remembers is being put down in front of her house and led back inside. She wakes up the next morning and calls her friend immediately and says, "I've had another one of my UFO dreams, and it was a doozy," and starts explaining what happened. And her friend's like, "You better turn on the news right now." And she rushes and turns on the TV, and it turns out there's footage of the Nevada del Ruiz volcano exploding in Colombia. It killed 27,000 people. The town she saw was Armero. It was completely buried. And, this was complete corroboration for her. She's pretty sure this UFO rescued those people from that town, apparently not putting them back. This
wow.
was very, very traumatizing for her. She had to go to the doctor. She still hasn't gotten over it. I mean, this was a big deal.
We're experiencing some interference, Preston. I can't hear you. There's a loud buzzing. I don't think it's coming in over the... It's not showing up on the show, but I can't... let me ask you another... good, it's gone. Whoever was playing around realized that, no, here it's back again. The listeners to Dreamland know that this happens a lot. Okay, now what I want to ask you next about Pat is the material. Now, first, I want to comment that I have a feeling that when these mass tragedies happen, a lot of people are moved away, and we never know it. We assume they're all dead. And where they're taken, I don't know. Now, it's a very interesting thing in her story, which is that she was told to respond to when she heard about a class in the occult.
Right.
Right. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, she was driving along, and she heard this voice that said, "When you hear an advertisement for an occult class, you are to take it." And she was used to these sort of visions and things, so she did. And this class really opened up a whole new life for her. She learned about her past lives. She really opened up her to spiritual subjects and things like this. And one day, she comes home, and this is, I think, one of her first really conscious face-to-face meetings with non-human entities. They looked sort of like grays. One of them, she said, was actually dressed up in a pinstripe suit, kind of a zoot suit, old style. She thought, which, you know, I know that's happened to you. She thought it was doing that to reduce the fear level, and it seemed to work. And the ETs wanted her to mention that they had come and visited her to her teacher in that occult class, which she did. So, yeah, weird stuff like that.
And she mentioned it to her coworkers, too, with predictably bad results. They teased the crap out of me, she says here.
Right, right. Yeah, she would mention, like, oh, you know, I think there's going to be a plane accident.
Right.
And no one would believe her. Boom, it would happen.
Now, what did the class cover? What did she learn in the class?
It was mostly about past lives and things like that. She didn't really go a whole lot into it, but it was various spiritual subjects, psychic readings, auras, this sort of thing.
The usual stuff, in other words. So it's in a way, it's an endorsement of that kind of class. And you know, we are onto something in terms of paranormal stuff. It's not actually paranormal. It's simply a part of nature that we either don't understand or have decided not to look at as ordinary, because it expands beyond the four walls of the physical world. So you folks can do this sort of thing. That's why I brought that up. It's a kind of endorsement of it. You can expand your mind if you're careful and don't get involved with people who are hucksters and so on and so forth. Freaky dreamlanders, none of the people who you're going to hear talking in over the next couple of minutes are hucksters. Instead, they're all very sincere. One of them may very well be me, and I'm super sincere. So do what they say and help us keep all this wonderful stuff going at unknowncountry.com. We'll be right back. There's something new for subscribers on unknowncountry.com. Every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. Pacific time, we're going to host a Zoom meeting. Subscribers can gather together there. We'll begin with a meditation. We'll be doing many different types of meditation. Then a discussion about the meditation and whatever else you want to talk about. We have a great and extremely popular Wednesday night live chat in our chat room, but this is something more. This is a meditation and getting to know each other and see each other if you wish to show your video face to face in Zoom every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. Pacific time. So join Unknown Country, become a subscriber, participate in this extraordinary community. Go to unknowncountry.com and click on the subscribe tab right now.
Whitley's new book, A New World, is getting great reviews. American cosmic author Diana Walsh-Pasulka says, "Enter this risky new world and leave empowered." New York Times reporter Leslie Keene says, "Riveting. I couldn't put it down." Amazon reviewers are calling it life-changing, mind-opening, the first real description of what contact is like and will be like. Don't miss A New World. As Professor Jeffrey Kripal says in his preface, this book is contact. Get A New World today. Available as a paperback, a hardcover, and an ebook wherever books are sold. And as an audiobook read by Whitley on audible.com.
Now we're going to go back and circle back to another case of a man having the same thing happen to him that happened. I mean, you notice I like kind of talk around it. I don't like to talk about it directly either. But he had a more straightforward approach to it. Can you tell us this story, Preston?
Yeah, certainly. The man's name is Joe Gardner. He's from Huntington, West Virginia. Really great guy. He was like 1974, when he was 5 years old, he saw his first UFO with his mom over the local grocery store. Just a sort of cylinder spinning in place. They talked about it, and like, I don't know what it is. But it was just a few months later, summer of 1974, he and his entire family, his mom and dad, and his sister, about the same age, one just under 1 year older, all go out to pick wild blackberries, something they've done often enough. And they just crossed the border into Kentucky, where, you know, they usually went, and they're driving by on this little rural road, and they see what looks like a house. They think it's a house. It's a flying saucer, really, on these really tall legs. It's perfectly round. It's got little windows. And they're like, look at the spaceship house. And Joe, he's completely excited. He really wants everyone to turn around and go investigate this thing. And finally, he just won't shut up. So they turn around, pull a U-turn, drive up to this thing. It's maybe, you know, a couple hundred feet off the road, right in front of a little valley there, surrounded by trees. The father gets out, Joe Sr., and little Joe follows, and they walk right up to this thing. The father starts walking around it. There's no driveway. There's no wires. There's nothing to indicate that this is a regular house. Joe walks up and actually touches one of the landing legs. He said it was ice cold, metallic, kind of like aluminum or something. And his father says, well, I don't know. This must be one of those energy homes. And he starts knocking on it. At this point, a hand reaches out. It's got three fingers on it and starts waving at them from above.
And a little
ladder comes down. A staircase. Thin, metallic. And Joe Sr. grabs his son, Joe, and they climb up this little ladder. Now, here's where it gets a little strange. Joe, who's, you know, 5 years old, sees immediately that this is not a normal man. He's like, look, that man looks like a bug, he shouts out.
Yeah.
And his father doesn't see this. His father is apparently seeing a screen memory of a normal person. But the room looks typical, you know, of a UFO. Rounded walls, indirect lighting, and so on. Very polished floor. And the father's like amazed. He's like, wow, you know, where's the power source? And this gray starts to show Joe's father how they're powering the craft. Joe wants to see too, but his father says, no, get away. And Joe sees this stand, this little pedestal with what looked like brownies or cookies on there, Oreos or something. Takes a bite of one. It's terrible. It's very bitter. He puts it down and is looking for some place to, you know, spit it out. There's a glass of liquid on the pedestal as well. He picks it up. It's sort of a stone chalice, and it's got this thick pancake batter type liquid, and he drinks it, and at this point, he blacks out.
Drunk that liquid more than once. I know what happened to him exactly.
At this point, he wakes up, and he's on a table. He can't move. He was dressed before. Now he's just in his underwear or just wearing his shirt or mostly naked. He can see his father sitting on a bench, apparently catatonic. He's calling for help, but of course no one, he can't even speak. And at this point he does see a gray walk right around the table. He can see the long fingers. He can see a long stainless steel-like instrument. He started to feel real fear, and this is when he had a physical exam. He says, I'm quoting, I felt something very cold and hard, like a rod or a cold pipe, just go up inside me, and then I blanked out. Some time later, he heard his name being called very softly, like Jojo, Jojo, that's his nickname, and there was a tall, nurturing female gray, sparkly lights all around her head. And she pulled him off the table and proceeded to basically give him a tour of the craft. He saw his other family members all sitting on dental chairs. He became very upset because he saw his little sister and there were these weird lights swirling around her. He couldn't make sense of what was happening. And the being told her, don't worry, told him, don't worry, they're just being examined. That's all. Everything's fine. They're going to be fine. They're not being hurt. He said it was really strange because the object itself was maybe 20, 30 feet across, but this room he was in looked bigger than a gymnasium. I mean, he couldn't even see the walls. So that's another weird detail that I do hear often enough in these cases. And this being took Joe up to the upper level then, sort of a observation deck perhaps, and showed him all these star fields. There's probably more he doesn't remember, but what he does remember is suddenly they're back in their car. The father is extremely angry and upset. He says those people weren't people. They rush home, and they had this trip, you know, blackberry picking. Normally takes an hour, maybe two. They had left at 4 a.m., and they got home around 1, 2 a.m. So there's like a 9 hours that they can't account for.
Yeah, they left at 4 p.m. I think you said a.m.
Yeah, 4 p.m., sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
So, yeah, they just piled into the house and fell asleep there on the living room floor, right there in a pile. A really traumatic incident. So that's how it all began for Joe Gardner, and I have to tell you, his experiences are some of the more extensive in the book. He's not sure he's dealing with ETs, as we think of in the classic sense, because he's had so much paranormal stuff.
Yeah, a lot of us are that way. I'm certainly that way. I think there's an ET component, but it bleeds off into, like, my relationship with my wife and my relationship with the ETs are all kind of mixed up together at this point.
Yeah, so, you know, we talked quite a bit about this. He had an experience that was very bizarre where he saw this light coming down the street. It stopped right in front of his porch there, started twirling around. It became emerald blue in the center. Lightning streaks were going off of it. His car was, you know, his street was pretty busy. It's suddenly empty of cars. There was a power outage just on his block at this exact point. A lot of weird stuff was going on. And out pops this face, this head of a woman, a human-looking woman. She's all dressed up. She's got gold bracelets on her arms and wrists. She's in a prayer position. She's got her hair all made up in braids. She's very beautiful. Deep, blue, dark eyes, and a mouth that's just an empty hole, and starts spinning in a circle and doing this weird sort of spiral dance back and forth across his yard, which is, you know, 50 feet across, for a good few minutes at least. And then just there's a flash of light as she bursts out of this pool of water thing and disappears. His wife is like right behind him in the living room trying to get to him, but she's paralyzed. He comes running out. She's like, what happened? She's completely dazed. And he's like, I don't know. I mean, this was not a UFO experience in the classic sense. You think maybe
right.
It's been or something.
So it's, you know, it just absolutely so varied. And it's like an experience, like when, give you an example, when the family was in the UFO that was small, and then suddenly they're in an area the size of a, you said the size of a ballroom, I believe, but big space that couldn't be in that little object. And that's because they weren't in it anymore. I know that this is the case because I had this experience when I was a child. I was on a train with my sister and my father, and taken aboard a UFO, and I saw a bunch of soldiers. This is in Communions. It's an old story. I won't belabor it, but I saw all lying on cots. But one of the things that's not in Communion is that I said to the visitor, the lady who was sort of touching each one of them with this little wand, whom I knew well. I mean, I was very glad to see her, actually, initially, until my father got scared, and then I got scared, too. But initially, and I asked her, first I thought we were on the train still, and then she said, we're not on the train. And I said, well, are we? Is this an army base? Because these were American soldiers. And she said, no. And then I said, well, where are we? And she said, here and there. In other words, those soldiers were on a base, but we were also at the same time with them and somewhere else. Now, you figure it out. I was 11 years old, and it went right over my head. And but the point being that this is an experience of interdimensional movement as well. It's not just flying around in a UFO, but there's cases where there's one case in the book. See if you can remember exactly which one it is, where the woman asks, she sees a big star outside, and she asks, "Is that the sun? Our son?" And the answer is simply no.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Tell that story if you remember it.
Yeah, I believe that's Lynette.
That's right, Lynette. Lynette.
Yeah, she's had experiences. Her story is really incredible. She's had experiences her whole life. She started really when she was 3 months old, 1957. She's driving along with her parents. She's just 3 months old, and they have a major encounter involving missing time. The father finds himself outside of the car suddenly. His watch is broken. It scared him very bad. But following that, Lynette kept, around age 5 or 6, waking up with these gray-type beings coming into her room. I just spoke with her recently, so she's still having encounters. But at any rate, her dad would come running in with a shotgun and, of course, not find anything. Lynette started having all kinds of psychic precognition experiences. She knew that President Kennedy was going to be assassinated. She tried to warn her parents. She had lots of precognition of accidents happening, the assassination of Martin Luther King, other stuff, which is important because later the ETs told her specifically that they had given her this as a gift in exchange for what they had taken from her. Because what happened is Lynette started to have marks on her body, missing time, more visitations. As a young adult, she had missing pregnancies, but as a kid, she does remember waking up on board a UFO, and on one occasion, they were showing her the sort of control room, and she's looking at the panels. It's really interesting because all the witnesses sort of describe the view screens in the same way. They're not windows like we would think of them. Rather, the walls just kind of turn transparent, and that's what she said. And she's looking out, and there's this sun. She's studying the sun in her school. And she asked the being, is that our sun? And the being said, no, it's not.
Yeah, and that's it. no explanation of where it was, where they were, or anything. It could have been anywhere in the universe or in another universe. I think it's so awesome. It's so wonderful. What an adventure we're on with this stuff. It's not all beautiful. I mean, because, you go back to what you just said about the missing pregnancies. What does that mean? Where are those babies?
Yeah, well, she got to meet her hybrid son, fully grown. It was probably one of her most profound encounters. She's had a lot. It's been really hard for her. She's had a couple of really major healings. Once the doctor was going to remove 25% of her lung, and for surgery, and they could not find the tumor. It was a spontaneous healing. All these experiences leave a long, long line of baffled doctors.
Well, yeah, they do. Because, for example, there's another one where leukemia just disappears.
Right. That was Pat's case, yeah.
Right.
But with Lynette, I have to tell you this, because she got this huge message from the ETs. And they were very communicative with her. And they, during one of her experiences, they healed her heart, and this was when she was talking to her full-grown hybrid son, and he told her, you must tell people to stop eating animals, you must tell people, I'm quoting here, that you are all interconnected, the power of intention is real, thought is real, if you don't stop putting out the greed and negativity you are putting out, you are going to kill your race. So he had a lot of spiritual messages to give to her.
That I've got that same message, not the part about not eating animals, but the part about killing the race has been the central message I have been receiving from the visitors since I was a child.
And she, I have to tell you what other stuff she was told. She was told that a lot of the cases throughout history where people thought were angels were actually them. They told her that they had boosted the emotional intelligence of dogs and cats specifically through genetic manipulation to make them more able to relate to humans. They said that a lot of people are going to be disappearing from our planet, and it's being done, quote, for the universal good. So all kinds of prophecies they gave her about, you know, a huge earthquake fault going through Missouri in the center of the United States. They said that there's going to be a bunch of hurricanes, and sure enough, there were. So yeah, she's had a lot of benefit in some ways from her encounters.
Now, this part about people disappearing, is her impression that they are being taken away or dying?
Taken away, rescued, relocated.
Well, you know, I had an experience about 5 days ago, 5 nights ago, of one of the most lucid dreams I've ever had. And I don't have too many lucid dreams. I love them when I do. I mean, anyone would. But this one was exceptional. I was taken to another world. And I was in a UFO, and it opened up. And one of the other people in it, a man I did not know, got out and walked, and he sort of lurched along and staggered. And the soil was a reddish-gray kind of color, and it was obviously not Earth. It was a different planet. I didn't see much detail, and I did get out briefly, but then I was told to get back in no uncertain terms, come back here. And a couple of other people walked off sort of staggering also, because obviously whatever was going on, the planet's gravity was not the same as this. It was either, I'm not sure whether, having never been in anything except this gravity, I'm not sure whether they were experiencing more gravity or less, but they were having a little trouble with it. Not a lot. I mean, it was something I'm sure they would get used to. But anyway, then I was back and awake. And I'm just wondering, you know, so many of us have had this thought that there would be a time when people would be taken from here. What is your impression of that reality of that? Do you think it might actually happen?
Yeah. I mean, we have a lot of missing people. And I'm not sure, you know, there's a strong UFO connection with all of them, but certainly there are some. And, I have to wonder about that. If there is a UFO connection.
Well, yeah, I mean, David Pilates is as much as said that he thinks that's a connection. I mean, he's got lots of cases of missing people, and, you know, they're always usually, interestingly enough, a lot of them are hunters. Of course, hunters are out in the wilderness, and people are often sort of drawn out into wilderness places. But, of course, the ones who describe this happening to them always come back. So, and I'm wondering often if people maybe don't come back, some of them.
Yeah, well, there's one case in the book that speaks directly to this. It's one of the most unusual cases I have. You know, I know there are abduction cases where people have not been returned. There's the case of, you know, Felix Moncla, that pilot who disappeared over Lake Superior after being vectored towards a UFO.
Right.
Frederick Valentik.
The Valentik case, exactly. And that's, folks, Frederick, you might not know this. Well, tell us about the Valentik case, and then we'll circle back to the one in the book.
Yeah, the Valentik case is a young pilot. I believe this was mid-1970s or so. He's flying off the coast of Australia and reports a UFO over his plane. He's describing it. He says, it's not an aircraft. It's metallic. He was having a lot of engine trouble. And there was a loud screech heard by the person he was communicating with. And that was it. There were witnesses who saw a UFO in that area at that time.
Right.
But he disappeared. He's gone, and we don't know where he is. We don't know where Felix Moncla is. I know two cases in New Mexico, one from Leonard Stringfield, a good researcher.
Yeah, God bless him, and God rest his soul. He was a fine researcher.
So, yeah, this does happen. And I've got a case, you know, here in the book where it was, it's a very strange case. It involved six friends. The guy I interviewed, his name is Tony. He was my sister's friend, actually, at the Renaissance Fair. I worked there 1 year, and so I got to meet him. He found out I was a UFO researcher, and he just flipped out because he had this story he couldn't tell anybody. No one believed him. But how it all happened is, this is like 1978. Tony and his friends decided to go up to Palm Springs. One of them has parents who has a cabin up there. It's a pretty rural area. One of the guys' name is Paul. That's his real name. I won't use his last name. But Paul suddenly decides to take a hike. And he disappears for too long. Everyone's becoming upset because they can't find him. They're thinking about sending out a search party to look for him when he shows up with this story. He says, "You're not going to believe what happened. I came upon a landed UFO." And his friends are like, right. But Tony, the guy I interviewed, knows Paul pretty well and knew that Paul was not the kidding type, could see that he was serious. Tony had himself had a lot of paranormal experiences. So he was a believer already in UFOs. And Paul says that, I was walking along, and I saw this object off in the distance at the base of a cliff, landed. There were figures walking around. So I walked up to it, and there were these people. Didn't look quite like a normal person. Perhaps what we would describe as hybrids today. But very human-looking, but bald, pale skin, large dark eyes, and wearing one-piece uniforms. They were very friendly. They invited him aboard the craft, let him look around. He said it was just a round room, very sparse, very clean, white, all white inside. And the beings explained that they were studying the wildlife in this area, and they invited him to go with them. And he's like, "Permanently?" And they're like, "Yeah, if you want, you can come with us." And he said, "No, I don't want to do it." And they said, "Well, we're going to be here next year on this day. And if you want, we will meet with you." And that's the story he told his friends. And a year starts to go by. You know, there's a few months coming up to this date. And Paul starts giving all his stuff away. Tony goes up to him and is like, "Are you seriously going out there and meeting with this UFO?" And Paul says, "Yeah, I think I will. I'm not sure I'm going to go with them, but I want to see if they come." And he drives up there and does not come back. After a couple of days, Paul's friends, you know, Tony and his friends and Paul's parents all go up there and find Paul's car. The keys are in it. And they never saw him again. They called they searched the area, couldn't find him, called the police. Police took testimonies, filed a missing persons report. But he's never seen again. I know a case just like this in Hawaii, or not just like this, but another permanent abduction. The lady was not returned. So yeah, this does happen.
I'm speechless. That is the most extraordinary abduction story I've ever heard, in the sense not of what happened, but of the fact that he obviously left and went with them.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose there's a possibility that he walked off somewhere and just wanted to, but no, I mean.
Yeah, but let's face it, that's a possibility. Maybe it was a suicide.
Right, but it doesn't look like it. All evidence points towards him being invited aboard a UFO by beings from elsewhere. And
then going with them?
Yeah, still living his life somewhere. Folks, very curious.
Everyone think about this. What would you do? Would you want this? I've often thought about it. Would I want this? And I have work to do here now. And I thought to myself that after I finished A New World, then I was finished here. But now there's another book, and it's an important book because it's a revisioning of the life of Jesus in a way that will take his message forward into the future, because his message is disappearing now. It's being absorbed by history in a lot of different ways. But after that's finished, I wonder. I love my family so much. I would hate to just disappear on them and them not have closure. But it would be quite a temptation. I wonder if you would, how you folks feel about it. Go on to Unknown Country and or write Whitley@Strieber.com and tell me, or start a thread on the free message board. Or if you're a subscriber, talk about it in the comments on this show. So it's such an extraordinary world. How do you feel, Preston? What if you were invited? What would you do?
I would be tempted. I have to tell you, I love Earth. I love, my life. But shoot, that would be a very tempting offer. I'm not sure I could do it. I'd certainly want to be able to inform my family. I know I've got a lot of brothers and sisters, nieces and nephews.
Yes.
I'm a single guy, so I'm not like super connected, but that would be quite an experience. Of course, depends who asks too.
Well, that's true. It might be kind of difficult to do that with the Grays, first of all, because they're so small. If you went to their planet, you'd be like a giant. And, they're... I've had them in my life a lot, and frankly, they're hard to be around because they're wonderful and I think also kind of dangerous in ways that we don't fully understand. So I'm not so sure it would be a good idea. But there are others, like the blonde people I saw back in the late 80s when they showed me one of their children. I know I could live with them. I would find it remarkable, and I think I would have a lot to give in journeying around this universe, especially to in advising about connection and contact with species that are at our same level or just a little bit behind us. Because I know so much about this kind of contact. I've spent my whole life working on it.
Yeah, this whole contact experience is much more complicated and in depth, I think, than people realize. It really affects the entire world.
Oh, God, yes. I guess if I could tell my family I was going, I would go. I would do it.
Hey, if there's a disaster coming and a volcano's going to bury me, I'm ready.
that goes without saying. Now, we're coming to the end of the first hour of the show, Preston. And, this has been in many ways just absolutely, totally fascinating. Tell me this. We're going to, in the half hour that remains, we're going to be talking about a few cases, but before that, what are you working on now? Because I know you well enough to know. I mean, folks, if you go to the back of Onboard Encounters, you will see a list of books by Preston Dennett, and there are a few. Just a few, right, Preston?
Yeah, I've been putting about one book on the average per year since 1996.
Right.
And two now per year. I'm really kind of ramping it up. I feel like this information is important and needs to get out. My next book, just completing it, is about, this is really interesting, drive-in theater UFO encounters. I put a book about...
Wow, I've never even thought about that. How fascinating. Tell us more.
Yeah, I kind of stumbled into it. That book I put out about schoolyard UFO encounters, I found out that schools... we're attracting UFOs, and these are kind of UFO attractors. And I was, years ago, I got a drive-in encounter that was just completely amazing. This UFO just hovers right next to the screen, completely freaks out all the people in the theater. They're running away. It was clearly a display. It wanted to be seen. And I kept running into more cases. When I wrote UFOs over Colorado, I ran into three cases in a row. And something clicked. I'm like, this is a thing. UFOs are targeting drive-ins. Let's see how many there are. I found 80 cases.
Oh, my God.
All across the United States, Canada, not a whole lot of foreign cases, because really, drive-in theaters are a U.S. thing, mostly. But, yeah, not normal sightings by any means. They are putting on displays that rival the movie over and over again. Shut down the movie in a number of cases. Caused panic. People have died because of the panic. There was a terrible case in China, I think, or Japan. China, where people were trampled trying to run away from this UFO. There's a case involving an apparent abduction. Government interference. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's okay. Well, look, that we'll have you on the show as soon as this, just get me the book as soon as it's out, because it's going to be, that's obviously extraordinary. So that is going to be a lot of fun and mind opening. And that's the wonderful thing about the way you do this, Preston. It's so, so accessible. It's so fascinating, and it just opens minds like crazy. And folks, one of the things you should do, if you've got friends who don't care about this or not interested, give them Preston's book, give them Onboard UFO Encounters or any of his books, because they all have this same wonderful quality of accessibility. It's easy reading and it's fun and it is profound, many, many cases. And also, but this is the important part. It's well researched. He's doing this. He's not just going over through the internet and repurposing stuff like some do. This is the real deal, a real researcher doing his job at the top of his game. So we're going to leave you, Free Dreamlanders, now, leave you behind, and I hope you decide right now to change your whole attitude and stop being all passive about this and subscribe so you can listen to the good part or the best part of the story. And part of that is going to be a book review that the visitors gave to a certain book called Communion. Now, as you know, you've read my books, and you know that one of the editors from William Morrow was given a very iffy review of Communion. Well, it turns out there's another review of Communion, and in a few minutes, we're going to be talking about that. Free Dreamlanders, thank you so much for being with us. Go to unknowncountry.com and subscribe. Get on board UFO Encounters by Preston Dennett. Visit him at prestondennett.weebly.com. Get into this, into the joy and fascination of it, and the deep importance of this whole process of contact.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host, and I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander. Thank you for listening.